Welcome to Paint Ed. PCA provides painting contractors with connections they need to grow their business. To find out more and to become a member, visit pcapainted.org. Find more great content like this on PCA Overdrive. A subscription to the platform is included with membership. For all of you non-members out there, sign up for a free trial. PCA Overdrive is available on the App Store and Google Play.
Welcome to Rocket Your Business for Trade Contractors. This podcast is designed to help trade contractors run their businesses more efficiently and profitably by eliminating chaos and discovering new growth opportunities. Learn from experts in the trades how to rocket your business to the next level.
So Jason, it is great to have you with us today in our podcast studios. And, you know, we're just all freshly back from the PCA Expo. And as our honorable past chair, I want to tell you what a great event it was. What did you think?
Yeah, it was an awesome event. And it's something you can look back at and say, you know, quantitatively, it was, you know, hit record numbers. And so we had just over 1,000 people there. And that's up from, you know, mid 600s the year before, which was up from, you know, the 400s the year before, which was, you know, it was kind of at the bottom before that. So quantitatively, you know, had an amazing expo, but also just qualitatively, it just felt different. And you could feel the camaraderie, you could feel the ethos, you could feel the culture. And that's just the novel part that the PCA is able to bring is, it's a nonprofit and there's a lot of servant leaders. And I think that ethos spreads through and creates a very cool feel for the event.
Yeah. And I don't want to give you a swollen head, but you know, all that, just like in any company, right, Jason, it comes from the top down. And I have to say, we've been a proud sponsor for probably 6 years now. Okay.
Yep. Thank you for that.
High energy. You guys you knock it out of the park with your educational programs that you have and the peer groups. You know, the peer groups, it's like drinking water from a fire hose. So who wouldn't want to be part of that? You know, with our Estimate Rocket customers, a lot of them feel alone and isolated. And I say, there's no need to feel like that because you have so much support. And we push a lot of people to join the PCA. We feel that's extremely valuable for them. The venue where you had it at was sensational. Orlando, the Dolphin, who doesn't love that? And they can bring all their kids and their kids can have a vacation while they're learning and experiencing something totally different. So we're huge proponents and we could feel that the numbers were up this year. We were literally jam-packed from the moment the doors opened until the guys were rolling up the carpets. So that happens to us all the time. You know, the union's trying to get us out of the way so they can get their work done. Yeah. So we have to pack up quick and go out in the hall. But we felt it, and I think every sponsor and vendor there felt it as well. It was cool.
Yeah, it was high energy. And I was kind of surprised by how excited everybody was about the trade shows, the big trades, because we did lunch right before it.
Yeah.
Usually you kind of have to lure people in with lunch at the back of the trade show place and say, well, if you want your lunch, you got to walk past everybody's booth. But we did it before. And then, it was very sustained high energy for the entire time.
Yeah. Well,
I won't mention the trade, but we went to another one where it was so bad the first day that they put a bar in the back of the trade show area.
I don't remember what that one was too. That was a few years back, but it was funny. And that's why, you know, we have the ability, we're on the outside looking in, Jason. So we have the ability to, after all these years going to great association trade shows, to say, okay, you know, who does a really good job at this? And I have to say, hands down, you guys do an exceptional job.
Yeah, so it's such a special association. And, you know, I had the opportunity to build on the shoulders of giants, as they say.
Right.
And there were those who were volunteer leaders before me.
Yeah.
And it's fun to enter a little bit more in the background as the new kind of layer of leadership steps in, and you're still there to support, but you're letting them build up. So it's a fun little camaraderie that we have of a fraternity for those that get to serve in the PCA.
Oh yeah. And even the new faces that I saw that are working at the PCA day in and day out to make that whole thing work. Well, the new faces, they were so delightful, and no one knew who I was, but they were always cheery and helpful. And I thought, wow, you know, they really do a great job at picking out good people to run this organization.
Yeah, it's one of those things, kind of when you're describing how do you entice people to be engaged in a trade show? For I think it's the third day that we do that. And right. You can start to attack the symptoms with little band-aids, but how do you cure, the root illness? And how do you establish a culture versus trying to do all these one-off things that people will throw at, here's how I can mimic what this would feel like organically. And I think that the classic example is you put the bar in the back, they'll draw people in, trying to mimic what it would feel like to have a very engaged, 1,000 person group of painters that are excited to learn, and have low egos. Right. I think that's something that we've done well, kind of over the past 6 years since you've been involved.
Yeah. I agree with that, actually.
How do you build an organic culture and an ethos where you're not trying to mimic success, but instead it's just happening? It is success. It is happening.
Right. And one thing that we can touch on as well, and I didn't know this until after it was over with, but Nick Slavik was mentioning that you guys do a charitable event. And so you just mentioned that to me, that you're helping the community, and I'm all over it. I said to Nick, you have to involve us in that as well, because there's so many people that would like to donate and help for that. So, if we can figure something out so that next year we all know ahead of time, we can bring checks with us and we can really all help and donate to the cause.
100%. And this is the second year we tried doing that. And last year we did it the day before Expo, and this year we tried the day after Expo.
Okay.
And we kind of learned it doesn't really matter. Those that want to give are going to give.
Right.
Good attendance either way. We weren't quite sure what was going to happen, but it was such a special day and a special moment. We're able to give back to a group called Give Kids the World Village.
Wow.
And it's a place that provides an amazing week-long experience for children who are terminally ill and their entire family. And it was just, I think everyone that was involved was touched. So that was something I had a joy of kind of playing Wayfinder on this year. Getting it to, hasn't quite been established. It's not really an SOP for it. But someone has to be that frontiersman and kind of wayfind their way west into the new land. And I was happy to play that point person this year. But looking forward to next year, it's going to be even better.
Right. And even if you guys put up a link somewhere to say, hey, if you want to donate to this is the organization that we've chosen to work with. If you want to donate to them, we would be happy to get involved in that. So please.
Yeah, I think our members and our vendor partners, the ethos of the PCA is made up of the people. And Estimate Rocket, you guys are no exception to that. So that doesn't surprise
me. Thank you. We do that on a regular basis. So, you know, we feel that that's part of building a community is you treat your people well, they treat your customers well, and then we all are successful and we treat our communities well. And that's what we love doing at Estimate Rocket anyway. So,
yeah, I love this conversation. It wasn't the topic we were originally going to talk on, but I get so excited about these things where there's this phrase called chop wood, carry water. And it's this kind of principle of you are what you do day in and day out, the small day-to-day mundane things. And how do you build a company like Estimate Rocket? How do you build an association like PCA? How do you build a life as an individual where you are what you want to achieve? You're not trying to mimic what it could look like. And it's those day-to-day things that we, those decisions, the thoughts, the actions in our personal lives as an organization or as an association that ultimately determine what we become. And so that's a life philosophy that's interesting to talk through.
Well,
actually, it calls up one of our core values, which is enjoy the ride. And it's about, every day is not going to be fun. Every day is not going to be the best day you've ever had. But overall, you should look forward to getting up every morning and going and do what you've chosen to do as your life's practice.
And I think that's a really important thing. I don't want to get all sappy right now, and I don't want to cry, but we have our company's mission, right? We're a software company. What's our mission? Our mission is to write something extraordinary and support it at an extraordinary level. But that's not the goal. The goal is to have our contractors making so much money that they can treat their family fabulously. They can go on vacations. They can send them to private schools if they choose to. They can treat their team members wonderfully. And then that has a whole ecosystem to it. And then they can donate to their communities. So when you want your customers to thrive, it has legs to it. And it spreads throughout the world. So that's really why we do what we do.
I love it.
Ideally, you're building a legacy, not a company.
Right. Right. Yep.
Enjoy the ride.
Yep, exactly. So let's talk about your painting company. Tell us what's going on with you guys right now.
So our company is called Paris Painting. We're out of the Twin Cities of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Been in business a little over 10 years now.
Yep.
And we're an 8-figure company, mostly painting houses. Every once in a while, we'll walk into a commercial job here and there, but it's more like, we painted somebody's house and their uncle owns a building type of a thing. It's not a real core focus to do commercial work. And we're sitting here in early 2024, and it's been a strong Q1. And so we just recut our goals to 20% higher than the goals we had set end of January or end of December. And you know, there's an art and a science to that. When you set your goals, you're ultimately committing to an overhead spend. You're going to trend monthly to see if you're on track or off track. But at some point, the management team does need to know what is the goal, what can we spend towards, and what resources do we have? And so that was something we just did here recently as we get ready to move into Q2, just because it's been such a great Q1. I think everybody's seen that.
Wow. Well, I hope from your lips to God's ears, I hope all of our contractors are feeling that same way.
And my general perspective on that is, you know, we're certainly helped by market forces, but I strongly and firmly believe that your only competition is your ability to execute your business model. And I say that as a residential painter. So I'm not an industrial painter. I'm not in a more consolidated market. This is a highly fragmented market. Mm-hmm, and so we offer a professionalized home service, and there's just not much supply of that in the market. There's not many companies that can execute at a level and scale where they're able to provide professionalized home services. Now, my general perspective and feeling is there's a very high demand for that. So consumers would buy more professional home services if there was more supply or more readily available supply. And then there's a whole supply chain we can talk through of, you know, what does it mean to have supply available? It has to be visible. They have to feel trusted. They can buy it. The sales process has to be easy. The scheduling has to meet their other core needs. There's a lot that goes into that. That's why I say do that at scale is a challenging problem. Software certainly helps achieve that, but I think how well can you execute, that's going to determine our level of success this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said, the quarterly resets are key, and making sure that you're on track and making adjustments as needed for more or less, you know, as the case might be.
Yeah, we've been lucky. I mean, this company started in 2012. So through 2022, you would say it was just a crazy tailwind that we had. And Q2 last year, so Q2 2023, we started to feel the first headwind in a long time. And I don't know if you remember back to that, but the economy was starting to get a little questionable. Interest rates were not coming down. But we've been extremely resilient. And I think the trades are, you know, despite that big boom that we had during COVID, these accounts get down to the fundamentals of what it is. And it's ultimately supply and demand. And that's still very, very favorable. And it's kind of fun to see the resilience that the economy has right now, even though interest rates haven't been dropped.
Exactly.
From a macro or even kind of midterm standpoint, I have a lot of confidence as someone who's writing the checks for these overhead line items to say, if the economy does start to falter, there's quite a good amount of like ammunition that the Fed has. Start cutting interest rates to juice it up a little bit. Now that nothing is ever, you know, in stone. With risk comes reward, right? We own a small business, and and we're aware of that. And, you know, we make good money, but there's risk in doing that. Right. But overall, you know, there's quite a bit of confidence. And then you look at the macro competition and you don't get too scared.
And the other thing that always interests me, what you do is you have a real estate holdings company. And so I want you to talk about that for a little bit, because I think our audience would be very interested if they feel like they have the ability and the funds available to expand and have a holdings company. Let us know how you got started on that and how you feel that part of your additional business is going.
Yeah, so something we started, you know, 3-4 years ago. But really, I remember the conversations were 2018. So that was more like 6 years ago, right? But then it takes a while to get working with the banks and find the land that you want and all those things. Like I said, we run a house painting company and it's been scaling and growing very nicely. And house painting companies are very profitable. It produces a lot of cash. What it does not require is much capital to continue to grow. So it's not like we're out there buying, you know, huge factories or developing, you know, buying land that we need to, you know, store our inventory on or things like that, or whatever the kids are buying these days in their companies. But it's not a very capital intensive business and shoots out a lot of cash. So then we start to say, you know, what are we going to do with this cash? And I just have phenomenal partners that I've been able to yoke up with, and we're all very asset minded. We basically commit our 30s to building assets. And so there's a couple of different options. One is real estate. And so we started to get into the real estate game. And so what we would do is we would buy a plot of land. We participate in the construction and ultimately hold it as the investors. And there's a lot of synergistic benefits that come with real estate and the trades. If you have an inlet into the trades, like house painting, you have access to labor, you have a little bit of intuition on how things work. You can really pencil out a lot of deals that may not otherwise work. Also, if you have somebody on the team that's good at developing land, knows how to talk to the city council and get the nice TIF notes, all those things, that certainly helps as well. The other component of all of holdings, so there's the real estate component. So we have, you know, multifamily housings that we've, you know, developed the land, built them up, we're continuing to hold them. And then we have this minority investments in house painting companies under the premise of we can come in as an active partner and build it into an asset, which is pretty novel for a painting company to go. You kind of need to scale it north of $5 million. So you really have the revenue that supports the infrastructure that allows that founder the option to step out if they want to. But those are the two main components of the holdings company, which is all of holdings. We have our multifamily investments. We have the investment in painting companies. And that's really of how do you be a good steward to the cash and not just give it to Charles Schwab.
Right.
Yeah. And that's really important because you can, you know, the stock market, you know, supposedly has that even return over the years, but I'm a pretty firm believer that real estate is a really good place to hold your money. It's probably the best in my feelings. It's one of the best stores of value that there is because it's appreciating and it's they're not making any more land, not on this planet anyway.
And I would say personally, between our software companies, because this is our second time having a software company, but between our software companies and our real estate investments, that's where we've made our money.
Yep. So we can build your personal financial statement, build your net worth. And there's puts and takes with all investments, right? And the things that we have an appetite for are more active investments, right? So we're active in the real estate, we're active in these painting companies. And when you're able to leverage your skill sets by also being the equity holder, you can get a greater rate of return. You want to be completely passive, right? That's a little tranche down. You're going to pay for that in your return. If you want to have access to liquidity, you're going to pay for that. So that's kind of the difference. One of those differences between real estate and the stocks is your ability to have liquidity, you know, quick liquidity events, right? In real estate, it takes a while to mature. You get maybe some cash on cash, but as you're saying, it takes a while to get that appreciation, that debt pay down. But then if you have a business that's producing cash and you have the real estate, you can negate some of those taxes with depreciation. And I'm a firm believer it's our patriotic duty to reduce our taxes as much as possible. just in the mindset of, you know, we want to put the capital to positive, you know, the best rates of return and government is needed and it provides a lot of good value, but it's inherently not the best option of getting rates of return on capital.
Right. True.
So that's my TED talk.
So that's good.
That's a good one.
Good stuff. Definite important nuggets there for sure.
probably not too controversial with tradespeople. I think all of them feel the same way.
Yeah.
But yeah, that'd be my advice is I think there's a lot of synergy that can come with real estate in the trades. If you can find a way to leverage your active energy and effort and be both the equity holder and the person doing the work, you're just going to have more control over the outcome of your success being an investor. Right. If you want to completely outsource it, you know, buy bonds and you're going to do that's as safe as you're ever going to get because the government prints as much money as it wants and it has, most missiles. So the dollar is not going to go away in that sense. But if you want to be active and do real estate or make investments in other trades businesses, that's the way to put your cash to use.
Yeah. And it's interesting, as you said, that the painting, the painting service business is good cash flow business. I mean, as long as you're keeping up, as long as you're doing it right, there is a good steady cash flow as you're doing the business and you don't have those big capital outlays that you need in a infrastructure oriented build, company
not like an AI business. We're trying to buy servers and racks of all the NVIDIA chips and things like that. And raising $6 trillion like OpenAI is trying to do as a joke, but yeah, it's not very capital intensive. And then it comes to the question of what do you want to do with that cash? And do you want to spend it? Do you want to consume it? Do you want to reinvest it? If you can try and reinvest it, how do you get a good rate of return on it? What's your risk tolerance? What's your opportunities available to you to be an active investor versus a passive investor? Those are all personal decisions, but they are on the table and they're ways to take advantage of your painting company. A lot of people think that they own a painting company and they actually have accessibility to much more options maybe than they realize.
Right. Yeah, they don't understand what they can do with some of that if they manage it correctly as they grow. That's important. I mean, those are the things that I think probably need more talking about in general is about financial management and asset management. And because I think there's a lack of that. There's a lack of it educationally and a lack of it just, a lot of contractors weren't, that's not how they started. They started as craftsmen and, love providing that craft and do a great job of it. And they're people, but they don't necessarily have the backgrounds to understand what to do with it and how to manage it and understand that they need to end up with something at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kathy was talking about kind of the ultimate outcome investment rocket, what you want to achieve and kind of the flywheel effect that has on the community. And I think something that, helps start that to move is vision. And you can have an inspiration or a vision or a role model or a mentor, something to shoot after that will, aspire people to greatness. Mm-hmm. And, the trades have historically been not that great and there are stereotypes and they exist for a reason. But there is this kind of new wave of expectations entering into the trades. And I believe it's entering into painting as well. This is not just going to be something where I survive. I want to thrive. And what does that look like? What's an example of that? What's a vision that can be cast? There's an old saying that, without a vision, the people cast off their restraints. What is going to get you excited and motivated to stay disciplined and consistent and make those, investments with your time, your resources, and your discomfort to achieve what goal, right? And that has to be defined oftentimes for people. I think that's a big part of starting the flywheel.
Yeah. It's funny when you say the discomfort, because I think that's one of the things that a roommate from college who actually, I talked him into starting his own business years ago, and he pretty much stayed a one-person operation and actually contracted for me for years programming. But he would always look at me and go, "You have such a higher tolerance for pain than I do. I don't know how you do it." But that's partly what it takes. That's part of the entrepreneur journey is you have to see it through. You have to work through the hardships and the challenges to get to that destination.
Yeah. And that is an entrepreneur at its core. And most people are not entrepreneurs. And it's a beautiful thing when you get a house painter who is also an entrepreneur. And like you said, startups require trauma. So you have to have a high tolerance for pain. And most people don't. And then, where do you go from there? And you start to bring in, partners or other resources that help you professionalize it and stabilize and scale it. Now you're playing in a different phase and a different game than the startup. Right. And so now, instead of having a high tolerance for pain as a badge and honor, when you start to scale and stabilize and professionalize, you actually want a very low tolerance for pain. You can't be okay with all those things. You got people that kind of really pack things into little boxes and make them perfect. But that entrepreneurial startup, there are not many people in the world that can actually do that successfully. It's a special thing.
Definitely a challenge. Vouch for that. But what one of the other topics that is relevant for us and we're seeing is this time of year, we see one of the telltales is that we see people adding their seasonal users back into the system. Because at the end of the year, you know, all of a sudden there's like, hey, where are all these new users coming from? We don't know. But, you know, that's and I think one of the big challenges that we see is with scheduling and keeping on top of scheduling out their jobs because they get this huge influx. And I'm guessing part of it is part of the process should start a couple months before the boom. But that whole scheduling process and just trying to, you know, manage the whole scheduling process. Is there any thoughts you have or ideas on that, how they can manage that better?
Scheduling is always a pain point for house painters and little business owners. And I would just say there is a, as you alluded to earlier, a tolerance for variance and discomfort and pain that you kind of need to be okay with. And this would be different if you were maybe only painting inside. We talk about like this time of year being the seasonal nature. So people are starting to get outside and they just expose themselves to the variation called weather. Right. And then you're dealing with your manufacturers and you're exposed to the variation of them executing an order correctly. Right. Or then you have your laborers made up of people that are delivering a product. And so you're exposed to the variances of their life chaos. And it's just, there's a lot of variables inherent in scheduling that we do. And you have to be willing to ebb and flow with that. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't set things up with an intelligent design on the front end. But I'm saying with that intelligent design, allow for some ebb and flow, allows, as we call it, tolerance within the system. You need a certain level of tolerance. So we see it. You know, we were able to get, I don't know how many projects in. We had a couple nice weeks of good weather here in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And then the snow just dumped back on us. But being proactive and not reactive is a big part of that. And we have a phenomenal, I would say, world-class leadership team and management team here that runs this company. And you know, they were ahead of the ball there and they were able to maximize things. And that honestly was part of us doing a recut and putting our goals 20% up on the year as they've been so on top of things and willing to maximize whatever nature will provide us with. But be proactive, not reactive. And then when you do schedule, have an intelligent design, but put some level of tolerance or wiggle room into your scheduling just so you're not surprised when something goes wrong, because it is going to go wrong. The actual thing that goes wrong might surprise you, but the fact that something went wrong should not surprise you.
Right. Yeah, I think that's great advice. And keeping, it's not a matter of necessarily keeping slack in your schedule. It's a matter of keeping flexibility. And I think in a prior conversation, you talked a little bit about the idea of setting people's expectations, setting customers' expectations, and leaving those as loose as possible. Whenever possible. So,
The tolerance can go either way.
Right? Exactly.
So when I say like tolerance or slack in the system, a lot of times people will say, don't overbook or overschedule because you may not get all done. Well, the opposite could be true too, right? You may have a great week of weather. Your crews may be super productive. Not only are they not sick, but they show up in a great mood and they get more done. you have slack in the rest of the system to then move work up. And so this is one of those, we've talked a little strategic. If we get to tactical advice you'd lay out for scheduling, it'd be to give some of those wider timeframes. And I think it's always great if you can say, we're going to paint your house in the summer/fall. And that's their expectation. Or if you have to, you say summer. Or if you have to, you say June/July. Or if you have to, you say June. Or if you have to, you say mid/late June. Or if you have to, you say mid-June. Or if you have to, you say this week. But rarely would we ever get more defined than a week. And then you'd probably end up flexing that one way or another because we have such a highly variable business. That's a sales tool that you can have and it's a skill. And the whole ecosystem from the sales reps, to the coordinators, to the project managers, that's all part of having an efficient and effective scheduling system.
Sure. You ever find at the tactical level, do you find situations where you've got, you end up with a half day to fill time in, and do you you plan those jobs too, in terms of, hey, we you know, that job's sure. hard to fit in, you know, but we may get an opening. How flexible are you, kind of thing to yeah. the client?
That's a great question. So in general, during the summer, let's talk about the peak mm-hmm. season, but in the summer, you know, every painter is very high demand, and there sure. are some projects that are maybe just less desirable. And those would be typically interior paint jobs mm-hmm. and small exterior paint jobs. And those right. might be decks or fences or whatnot. And that mm-hmm. hopefully, or even with a little bit of education, is not shocking to the client.
Right.
You say, hey, I understand this is not a big job. I'd still like to get it done by a professional home service company. Right. How do we accomplish that? And one of the ways you can accomplish that is through flex scheduling. And so right. flex scheduling says, we're going to prep your job. It's going to be ready to go.
Yeah.
But under these terms, under these conditions, we're going to be ready to execute and get yours in. And so for an interior, the classic rain day, you know, flex jobs that you have in the back of your pocket.
Sure.
So you'd say, like, we're expecting great weather, and we're in Minnesota. So in the Midwest, it's kind of hard to predict weather because the jet stream comes over the Rockies and you don't quite know what it's going to do until it lands here. And so we have a pretty uncertain projection in our weather.
Yeah. Then the lakes knock it back on you.
The lakes knock it back. And, you know, I can say that I started painting in 2006. And so I have enough years under my belt to just tell you, there's no such thing as a weather forecast. It's called a weather prediction. That's what we have in Minnesota. But yeah, the rain day jobs, that's a classic one that you pull out of your back pocket. Right. The exteriors that you're prepped and ready to go. You say, if we can squeeze you in this week, we're going to do our best. Otherwise, maybe next week, worst case, the week after. Right. So then you basically have a 2-week window where you can squeeze them in on a part day. And if right. you don't, well, now you have to do that undesirable job on that third mm-hmm. week. But that's hopefully right. the price that you're going to pay for, you know, depending on where you end up in the bell curve, the variables that run into you.
Sure. Yeah. The weatherman that's an interesting job, because it'd be nice to have a job where you can be right less than 50% of the time and still get paid on this.
It'd be fantastic. No, they do it. They work hard and they've got great data and the whole system of how weather's, you know, calculated with balloons and whatnot. Sure. I'm sure it's very impressive. But when you're in the Midwest and the air is coming over the Rockies and you hear, you know, it's just tough. It's tough to run a right. business. And again, you get enough repetitions, depending on where you are in the country, your weather may be more consistent or more chaotic. Right. You know, it's a hard thing to communicate to humans that you gotta be ready for the chaos. And I'd say we're running into that a little bit too, even with this spring. You know, human nature, we believe that weather is always a linear curve. And so you think, oh, it's starting to get warm, it's always gonna be warm. But in reality, it can get cold and warm and cold and warm. And you hopefully play to those, you play to your advantage when you can, then you try and educate and minimize it when it's to your disadvantage.
But March is still March.
Yes. Yeah. There's kind of like, how do you fight the rising tide, right? There's only so much you can do. You can get
wait
your bucket
6 hours.
Out. You can do your bucket out. Yeah. But by and large, there's these large unmovable forces that, will dictate things as well.
Julie.
So Jason, I want to ask you, what would you say are scheduling traps for your operations and production managers that can get them into scheduling trouble?
Yeah. So let's think, there's kind of two ways you can go. Well, I'll say there's two ways and then maybe an issue. So one way would be you underschedule, mm-hmm. right? Why are you underscheduling? It's usually mm-hmm. out of fear. Right. So you're afraid that something's going to happen. You're not going to get to your work. And that's a classic. And I think the way that you counteract that is on the front end with the sales, have a little more variability. If you're not setting the right expectations, it's a really tough thing to hold. Then you probably should underschedule. Mm-hmm. You just set really hard expectations to deliver on.
Right.
It's going to be only under the best conditions you hit them. The other one would be overscheduling. Right. And that's usually you're a little too optimistic. So you're not afraid, but maybe you're a little manic. So one side you're depressive, the other side you're manic. That'd be overscheduling. And again, I start with that with expectations of, you know, here's my bell curve of variability I'm going to be thrown at. And, you know, I could have great weather. I could have terrible weather. I could have perfect vendor deliveries. I could have terrible vendor deliveries. I could have nobody ever get sick or have a funeral or car breakdown, or that could happen all the time. Right. And I stack these bell curves on top of each other. And here's the essential matrix of possibilities that I get to navigate through.
Right.
So not being too depressive, but not being too manic, and then having proper expectations on the front end. That's key. Now, almost separate as a silo that slices through all that vertically, you'd say just putting the proper resources to the proper needs at the proper time. And so some crews may not be great at certain projects, but they may be really good at other certain projects. And having an intimate knowledge, or at least some kind of a transfer system to say, you know, this crew does not like to do work that has very high areas. Because if they show up to a job site that has a lot of high areas, it's going to be trouble for everybody.
Right.
Or you'd say this crew is really, really good at a high needs client for communication. And so when they show up to a house and this client wants to check in 3 times a day, it's going to be a great fit and everybody's going to win. But having those layers, we call them badges and competencies of how do you match, you know, the bright labor source to the right client needs. That's a big issue that we see in scheduling. And how do you solve that? It's your single source of truth, whether it's your software system or Notepad. The worst place to remember thing is in your brain. But a lot of people do that. I understand you use your intuition. Just know that doesn't scale and it doesn't transfer.
Yeah. Do you actually have like specific categories that you use to identify that, you know, this people person, great at high areas, those kinds
of things? I'll try and remember it off a recall. But there's skills and there's competencies. So skills would be, you know, exterior painting, interior painting, enamel work, carpentry. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes someone can have a certain skill, but not another type of skill. Or in the jobs require a certain skill and they get tagged during the estimate formation process. And the competencies, it is things like do we call it difficult terrain?
Yeah.
One is the size of job. So some crews will only do large jobs, right? Because they have a big crew. Some will only do small jobs. You put them on a big job, that's a no-no, right? And some can do everything in between. Another is a communication need of the client, right? So some clients, they want to talk to you a lot. And there's a skill to communications. I'll also tell you, there are some great painters that are not good communicators. And they work great with clients who don't have a high communication need on their project.
Right.
I believe the fourth one is just detail work. So what is the level of detail of the project, right? So that's not the skill need. So it's not enamel versus exterior, which does have a level of, you'd call it intricacy to it. This is more of, you know, how many colors are on the house? You know, are there French cuts that come in? Or is it just your simple split level suburban house, two colors with a flat, you know, trim cut, you know, front face trim cut that, you know, most people can do.
Yeah.
So when you say high level, a customer has a high level of communication needs within a day, how would you define that? You know, because I'm thinking about myself and what would I need to ask?
I got to go now.
What would I need to ask the painters?
Yeah. So it's a 1 through 3 badge system, right? Mm-hmm. And that's something for the estimator to find out on the front end, something for the coordinator to confirm during the scheduling process. Mm-hmm. And then by then, you know, the die has been cast and you're kind of the crew that's out there is out there. But this all comes into maximizing your resources of scheduling. You know, let's say you only have 2 crews that, you know, have all the other skills, but then they're also really good communicators. Let's say you have, you know, 4 job sites coming up in the next week and 2 of them have high needs for communication. 2 of them don't, you know, it doesn't take a rocket surgeon to say what you need to do here. You want to put the high needs clients with the high needs solving crews.
Right.
And if you don't do that, what happens is you start to lose out on your ability to schedule things quickly, right? Okay. So if you have a crew, whether it's a high level of terrain difficulty, whether it's, you know, someone that is going to, so the way that our sales reps will define it is, this is someone that's going to be out of the house and would like a daily check-in, or is this, you know, a retired couple that has a lot of questions,
over there, or
the engineer, right? The classic one, right? If it's one of those two things, you're gonna want someone who's really good at communicating because that client's gonna probably get a ton of value out of that. If it's a rental property and the owner lives in another state, don't waste that skill badge on that job site because you might have an estimate that you're doing and the answer of, you know, you have to, let's say they have a high communication need. If you tell them I can get to your job in 2 weeks versus 6 weeks, that could be the difference between you landing the job or not. So having that, you know, coded in skill system, competency system, we call them badges, that helps you maximizes what ends up being a limiting resource somewhere in your labor pool. So you can give the best answer when you're trying to sell a job.
Okay.
Yeah, very interesting. I think Kathy, the other thing,
you'd be a 5-star across the board though. There'd be no, you'd be perfect.
I'm just trying to think of though, what would I want to ask them during the day while they're working? I think.
So like an engineer is like, what do you think about?
If the couple's retired and they're just sitting around watching painters, I can see that there might be questions, but
I think one of the big challenges, Kathy, that you're thinking of our experience of a year ago. And the big problem was that the expectations was a new house and the painting crew came in and they didn't really have, they didn't know what the job was. Mm. We kind of knew what the job was and we happened to be around, not living there yet, but, and we're like, no, that's not, you know, that's the wrong color there. I think that was just an overall communication problem with,
good question,
with their team. You know, they didn't have a work order. There was no paper that said, oh, the living room is this color and the bedroom is this color and the, you know.
But I have to tell you this, they left and there were lots and lots of dried runs of paint running down my trim, running on the walls. And so I'm the kind of person that I don't want to make anyone feel badly if that's their skill level. Because the builder got them. So I don't want to make anyone feel badly. So we just hired another guy to come in and touch everything up, but there was a lot. For instance,
well, again, it was a mismatch of skills and communication. Yeah, really.
But they painted over even globs of filler on the trim and stuff. It was great.
They may not have been painters.
It's entirely possible.
I don't know.
Well, but again, I think it was I really think it comes, it's one of those communications things. And I think that's, it's critical. It's critical that the crew knows what they're doing, you know, what the mission is or what the job is clearly before they start. And I think there was also the, you know, the carpenters may not have left things the way the painters were expecting them to. So now
it's always hard working with the GC. And, you know, when I was more involved in the business, GCs would ask if I could give them special pricing. Yeah. And I was like, oh yeah, you'll definitely get special pricing. Yeah. it's just not going to be the way that you think it's going to be.
I'm going to add more to it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it is. You know, cause there what's unfortunate, the hard part about that is, you know, where the rubber meets the road is it's a lot of organization and communication, which somehow are like the biggest skill deficits in GCing. That's like really you need to be the best at, and their problems become your problems as a subcontractor, assuming you're not able to hold that tension. And most subcontractors, especially painting contractors, have pretty low self-esteem, and their ability to lean into that conflict and stand up for, you know, their rights. I mean, you guys, you're just talking, Kathy, even as a homeowner, you're like, hey, I don't want to cause a conflict here. You know, the painting contractor oftentimes feels the same with that builder or that GC.
Right.
And I didn't want to make,
they're not that way on the East Coast. Everybody on the East Coast just cusses at each other. And they're very
as a matter of fact, I can vouch for that.
But in the Midwest, we're all pretty nice people and we end up just being martyrs.
Mm-hmm. So before we wrap this up, I just want to ask you, Jason, because we're always looking to learn ourselves when it comes to software. So when you're talking with your peers and say they're using spreadsheets and they're thinking about using software products, what are some of the key factors that you would kind of suggest to them when they go out and they evaluate software tools for their business?
Great question. I think there's so much good technology out there. It's really gonna come down to the implementation. So I take a look at the support team. I'd say, are there resources that can help me get trained in? Is this something that I can wrap my mind around and I can ultimately execute on? Because the reality is, you know, most of the softwares I've taken a look at have robust capabilities that are beyond, you know, the practical use of most implementers of small painting companies.
Right.
So it's really going to come down to, are the resources there to help you learn it? Is there some level of social proof? where others have used that product, or you know, they're involved with something that you're involved with, and you can vouch for them. And then ultimately, like, do you feel comfortable that you're gonna be able to implement this? I wouldn't be looking at, you know, which one has more bells and whistles or less bells and whistles. Mm-hmm. It just comes down to, are you going to do it? That's going to probably be the limiting factor until you get a little more sophisticated. Right. But if you're on that first like spreadsheet to software, so you're probably looking to add some gates. You're probably looking to add some complexity that your spreadsheet isn't offering. It's really going to come down to the execution, the implementation. Yeah. Any support you can get for that would be my advice.
Mm-hmm. Well said. No, I can't think.
I think the biggest challenge that for us is on the implementation side, because it's more, you know, to implement a more fully featured system than your spreadsheet. First of all, you really have to kind of already have a handle on what you're trying to accomplish and what your problems are that you're trying to solve. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't have a clear vision of that, and social proofs is important, but sometimes social proof is, oh, it's great. You need, this is perfect for you. Go get it. You got to go a little deeper there in your questioning, because it may be the same thing you already have right now in a different disguise, you know? And so that's what we find is trying to help people set their expectations on, you know, what are you trying to do? And here's how it does it. And then helping them, you know, when they decide, okay, yep, these are the things that I'm looking for, then we need to be able to help them to implement them properly, because they're not necessarily trivial to do or simple to do. They're relatively simple to once you know it, but it's just like any other skill, like painting or whatever craft or trade you're doing, you have to learn that trade before you can get good at it. And unfortunately, software is not really any different than that.
It's kind of like an amplifier of an ability. Mm-hmm. If you think about it. And someone may say, you know, what's the great recovery pill I can take to improve my physical fitness? He said, well, it's not going to do you much good if you're not exercising. And if you haven't gotten the basics down of exercising, this lever that you're pulling of like massage boots and whatnot, that's not going to do much. And that's kind of technology. And if you don't have the basics of job costing, you know, having good data coming in, understanding the process of flow of how the job's going to go, you have this giant lever called software, but you're not doing the basics. You're not doing the fundamentals. And so where is the fulcrum? It's kind of, you got to build ultimately, I know the painters are following around with this perfectly. You just got to build the fulcrum first. Mm-hmm. You build the fulcrum, it'll all step into place.
Mm-hmm. It all works.
Although it really made my heart smile, because we were at the PCA Expo. A client came up and said, Kathy, I was out to dinner with my wife, and all of a sudden my phone started buzzing. You guys closed an unsigned proposal that I had out there for 2 years. You remembered it, you closed it, and I got 25% deposit in my bank account. And I was like, oh my God. He started crying, I started crying. So those are some of the nice things that a software program can do for you that you don't even think about, is it will actually follow up on all your unsigned proposals. And unfortunately, they don't get signed on the spot 100% of the time. So they go into that drip, and the drip alone is amazing when it can close deals for people and, you know, have the customer sign.
Yeah, humans are really bad at that. And
you know, I know.
Computers are really good at that.
I know.
Absolutely true.
They think it's a person. The customer thinks it's a person reaching out to them, but it really isn't.
Well, it is. The intent was there at some point to reach out. It's just initiated a while ago, and it was
exactly
get sent for a while.
Exactly. Jason, this has been so much fun.
Yeah.
Let's say that we're going to catch up again in the fall once you've done all your busy stuff, because we'd love to talk to you again, but you're doing an amazing job. I love your passion for helping other people, elevating them. You know, you do so much with peer groups and all that. God bless you. You're really trying to give back in so many ways to your community and all your peers.
Well, I've been very fortunate, and there's tremendous opportunities for me to give back, and I give a lot of props to the PCA. It's just it's a 140-year-old association started by a bunch of people whose names I don't know, and they essentially did a lot of hard work, and they did it on a volunteer basis, and now one of the greatest ways to receive is to give, and I have a tremendous opportunity to be in a position where I can give, and I've not found a better vehicle to do that than with the PCA. So thank you, Ascent Rocket, for being loyal sponsors of the PCA for all these years and being involved in all the ancillary ways that you can. And I'll get the philanthropy committee on you guys as well to see what we can do for the next
event. That's important. That's the most important piece of this too.
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks so much, Jason.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jason. Yeah. Thank you, Kathy.
Rocket Your Business for Trade Contractors is brought to you by Estimate Rocket, makers of the top sales and job management software for contractors. Manage the chaos and rocket your business to the next level.
Paynet podcasts are produced by the Painting Contractors Association and are made possible by members and industry partners. To find out more about upcoming education opportunities, or for more information about joining PCA, visit pcapainted.org.